Social media.
Yeah.
It's everywhere, right? Every day there's another crazy headline about its impact on, well, everything.
Yeah, it's inescapable these days.
But this case, Twitter v. Tom Ney, this one feels different. Like, it goes way beyond the usual debates about online safety and all that.
Oh, absolutely.
It raises this huge question. Can these tech giants like Twitter really be held responsible when terrorists use their platforms?
You're hitting on the core issue here. This case dives into some pretty deep legal territory.
Murky waters, for sure.
It all comes from that horrific 2017 Istanbul nightclub attack, the one where an ISIS terrorist killed 39 people. Just awful.
Tragic.
The victims' families, they sued Twitter, Facebook, Google, the whole gang.
All the big players.
Claiming they actually helped ISIS spread their message.
And by doing that, contributed to the attack itself.
Right.
So let me get this straight. Just because ISIS used these platforms, that automatically makes the companies legally responsible for the attack.
That's the question, isn't it? It seems like a big leap, right? And that's what the Supreme Court had to figure out.
Makes sense. So what happened?
The families, they sued under the Anti-Terrorism Act.
Okay.
Specifically, a section dealing with aiding and abetting terrorism.
Aiding and abetting. So, like, they were more than just a bystander.
Precisely. Think of it this way. To actually nail a company for aiding and abetting, you got to show they were more than just, you know, passively letting it happen.
Gotcha. So it's not enough to just show ISIS was using the platform. What else do they have to prove?
Three things.
Okay, lay it on me.
First, that the companies knew a terrorist organization was using their platform.
Makes sense.
Second, they didn't just know about it. They actually helped the organization in some way.
Okay.
And lastly, this is key. There has to be a direct link between what the company did and the attack itself.
A direct link. Got it. So the families were arguing that just by letting ISIS use their platforms, they were basically like helping them carry out attacks.
That's the gist, yeah. And it gets even trickier. They also claimed that the way these platforms use algorithms, you know, to show you stuff you're likely to click on.
Yeah, the whole you might also like thing.
Exactly. That, they argued, was helping ISIS's message spread further and faster. Like, it was built into the system.
That's where things get really interesting. It's one thing to say ISIS used the platforms, but another to say the platforms themselves were helping them.
Right, a big difference.
So what did the Supreme Court think about all this? What was their take?
Well, they ultimately sided with Twitter.
No kidding.
Big win for the tech companies. The court zeroed in on that third thing we talked about, that direct connection to the attack.
Right, right.
Sure, there's no doubt ISIS used social media. Plenty of evidence for that.
Tons.
But there was nothing to show the Istanbul attacker himself used those platforms to plan or carry out the attack. No smoking gun there.
So just because a terrorist is on a platform doesn't automatically mean the company is on the hook for what they do.
That's what the court decided. Justice Thomas, he wrote the majority opinion. He made this interesting comparison. He said, imagine holding social media companies responsible just because terrorists use them.
Okay, I'm listening.
Wouldn't we then have to hold cell phone companies liable? Email providers?
I see where he's going with this.
If terrorists use those to communicate, does that mean those companies are aiding and abetting too?
That opens up a whole other can of worms, doesn't it?
It does.
But okay, what about the family's argument about the algorithms? The whole idea that platforms were basically helping ISIS spread their message just by the way they were designed.
That one got shut down pretty hard. Yeah, the court said, basically, these platforms are more like a neutral town square. Anyone can speak.
A free-for-all.
It's not like they're a megaphone specifically amplifying ISIS's message. They drew a clear distinction there.
Okay, so they're drawing a line between providing a platform, you know, town square idea, and actively helping in an attack. But where is that line exactly? What if, say, ISIS had paid to promote their posts on these platforms? Would that have changed things?
Now we're getting into the weeds. This is where it gets super nuanced.
Hitty.
Justice Thomas brought up this idea of conscious, culpable participation.
Whoa, okay, break that down for me.
Basically, he's saying if a company is knowingly working with a terrorist organization.
Like taking their money to promote their stuff?
Exactly. That could be a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just about If the platform was used, it's about the company's intent, their level of involvement.
You got it. That's the key takeaway.
To really grasp how the court was thinking here, we got to look at another opinion, this one from Justice Jackson. She had some interesting thoughts.
Oh, she did. This is where we get even deeper into the legal realm.
All right, I'm ready. What did Justice Jackson have to say?
Well, she agreed with the overall decision, you know, siding with Twitter, but she pointed out a super important difference. She said, there's a huge gap between a company actively helping terrorists and just not doing a good enough job policing their users.
So turning a blind eye isn't the same as lending a hand.
That's it. One is negligence. The other is active participation. Two very different things, legally speaking.
And she was worried that if companies could be held liable just for bad moderation, you know, not doing enough,
that could lead to them censoring way too much just out of fear.
Playing it safe.
Which would be a disaster for free speech online. Too much power in the hands of the platforms.
Okay, this is all super interesting from a legal perspective. But let's bring it back to the listener for a sec. What does this actually mean for us?
Right, the big picture.
Does this ruling mean social media platforms can just ignore terrorist content now?
Hold on, not so fast. This ruling is all about the Anti-Terrorism Act. There's a whole web of other pressures these companies face.
I'm like, what? Give me some examples.
Think about advertisers. No company wants their ads showing up next to terrorist propaganda. It's bad for business.
Yeah, makes sense. They'd lose customers for sure.
So platforms already have a financial incentive to keep that stuff off their sites. They got to keep the advertisers happy.
Right, money talks. You also mentioned something about EU regulations being tougher on this stuff than US law.
Absolutely. The EU has way stricter rules about online content moderation. Way stricter. And companies can still face lawsuits under other laws or even court orders.
This case wasn't about Section 230, right? The law that protects platforms from being sued for what users post. But I feel like there's got to be a connection.
Sharp observation. While Tomna didn't directly involve Section 230, it actually kind of strengthens those protections.
Yeah, how so?
By making it even harder to hold platforms liable for aiding and abetting, it reinforces this idea. They aren't directly responsible for what users post.
So it's like double protection for these companies.
You could say that. Section 230 shields them from lawsuits over user content. And now, Tomna limits their liability even in extreme cases like terrorism, as long as they weren't directly involved. It adds another layer of defense.
Interesting. So where does this leave us? What are the key takeaways, especially for lawyers who might be dealing with these kinds of cases? What should they be thinking about?
Well, the big one is this. It's going to be much tougher to argue that just allowing a terrorist group to use a platform is enough to hold them liable. The bar is higher now.
Gotcha. Lawyers representing victims are going to have to dig deeper, find that smoking gun.
Exactly. They need concrete evidence linking the platform to the actual attack.
And what about lawyers on the other side, the ones representing these platforms? What should their strategy be in light of this ruling?
They can emphasize that whole conscious, culpable participation thing. Hammer that point home.
Saying their client was just a neutral platform, no intention of supporting terrorism.
Right. They can also highlight the free speech angle. You know, if platforms are too scared of lawsuits, they'll over-censor, and that's bad for everyone.
So this ruling gives platforms more legal wiggle room, but they still can't just sit back and ignore the problem, right?
Absolutely. They still face pressure from regulators, advertisers, the public. They have a responsibility to be proactive, try to stop their platforms from being used for harmful purposes.
And this is just the beginning, right? This whole debate about online content moderation, it's not going away anytime soon.
Not a chance. This is just one battle in a much bigger war.
And we'll be here to break it all down for you.
Every step of the way.
You know, as we're digging into this, I keep thinking about all the other kinds of bad stuff online. It's not just terrorism, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a whole ecosystem of problematic content out there.
What about, like, hate speech?
Mm-hmm.
Or all that misinformation flying around? Does this ruling even touch on those issues?
That's the big question, isn't it? It really gets to the heart of this whole debate about content moderation online. What can these companies be held responsible for?
Yeah, where do we draw the line?
While Tomna was about terrorism, specifically the court's logic, while it could easily apply to other types of content, too, it sets a precedent.
So the door is open.
Potentially. Remember that conscious, culpable participation idea we talked about?
Right. The company has to be actively involved in pushing the harmful stuff, not just giving it a platform.
Exactly. So think about it. If we apply that to something like hate speech, it would be way harder to sue a platform just because some hateful comments popped up.
They'd have to be, like, actively promoting it.
Or pushing it towards specific users, yeah. There'd have to be clear intent.
Wow. So this ruling could have ripple effects way beyond just terrorism cases.
It could. It's setting a higher bar for holding these companies accountable for, well, pretty much anything.
Which some people would say is a good thing, others would say it's a bad thing.
It's complicated. It's important to remember this ruling. It's just one piece of a much larger puzzle.
There's so much more going on.
The debate about content moderation, it's a tangled web. Legal stuff, ethical concerns, even technological limitations all come into play.
And we can't forget about the whole free speech issue.
Oh, that's the core of it, right.
Where do we draw that line? How do we protect people from harm, but still allow for open expression online?
It's the million-dollar question, and honestly, there's no easy answer.
No easy answers at all.
On one hand, yeah, we want to stop dangerous or hateful content from spreading like wildfire.
Of course.
But on the other hand, we can't stifle legitimate viewpoints just because someone might get offended, and we definitely don't want platforms censoring stuff just because they're afraid of a lawsuit.
That's a scary thought. Too much power in the hands of a few companies.
Exactly. Finding that balance between safety and freedom, it's a constant struggle. And it's only going to get tougher as our lives become even more intertwined with the digital world.
Well said. Speaking of things changing rapidly, remember when we talked about Section 230?
That law that shields platforms from lawsuits over user content. Yeah, how could I forget? It comes up in practically every conversation these days.
And how this TAMNA ruling seems to make those protections even stronger.
Right. It adds another layer of defense for the platforms.
But here's the thing. There's a lot of talk about changing Section 230, maybe even getting rid of it altogether.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole movement building momentum.
Some people are saying it gives platforms too much freedom, that they need to be held more accountable for what happens on their sites.
They make a valid point. I mean, think about it. Section 230 was written before social media even existed. The internet landscape has changed so much since then.
It's a different world now.
So, yeah, some argue that we need an update. Maybe get rid of the blanket immunity and set some clearer rules about when platforms can and can't be held liable.
More specific guidelines instead of just a free pass. I can see the logic there. But how do you even define harmful content in a way that everyone can agree on?
Ugh, there's the rub. That's the challenge with this whole approach.
Seems impossible.
It's a slippery slope for sure. What's harmful to one person might be perfectly fine to another.
Exactly. It's subjective.
And any attempt to define it could lead to censorship or, like we said before, platforms being overly cautious and suppressing legitimate viewpoints.
So what's the alternative? What else are people proposing?
Well, another approach focuses less on the content itself and more on transparency and accountability.
Interesting. So instead of trying to control what people say, we focus on making sure platforms are playing fair.
Right. The idea is to force these platforms to be more open about how they operate.
So like, their content moderation policies, how their algorithms work, all that behind-the-scenes stuff.
Exactly. Make them show their cards. The goal is to give users and regulators more power to hold platforms accountable.
Okay, I like that idea. More sunlight, less shady practices. But how do you actually enforce that kind of transparency?
It'd require a multi-pronged approach, for sure. Stronger regulations from the government, independent audits from outside experts, maybe even legal penalties for platforms that aren't playing by the rules.
It sounds like a tall order.
It is. This is a complex issue with a lot of competing interests and values at stake. There's no easy solution, no magic bullet. It's going to be messy.
So what's the takeaway for our listeners? What should they be thinking about as they navigate this whole online minefield?
Well, I think the most important thing is to remember that we all have a role to play in shaping the future of the internet.
It's not just up to the tech companies.
Definitely not. As users, we need to be more aware of the potential dangers online. Think critically about what we see and read. Don't just believe everything that pops up on your feed.
Do your research, people.
Exactly. And as citizens, we need to be part of the conversation. How do we want this online world to function? How do we balance safety and freedom? These are important questions.
Really important.
And finally, we have to hold these tech companies accountable. They have a responsibility to create platforms that are both innovative and responsible. They can't just focus on profits and growth while ignoring the real-world harms.
It's a tall order, but it's gotta happen.
It does.
This conversation has really opened my eyes to just how complicated this whole issue is. It's like we're just scratching the surface.
We are.
This case, Twitter v. TAMNA, it might seem narrow on the surface, but it really has huge implications for the future. It touches on everything from freedom of speech to corporate power to the very nature of our online lives.
No doubt about it.
We've covered a lot of ground already, but there's still so much more to explore. How does this case fit into the bigger picture of free speech in the digital age? What does it mean for the future of online platforms? What's next? We'll dive into all of that right after the break. All right, we're back, ready to tackle the big picture stuff. This whole Twitter v. Tomnet thing, it really makes you think about where free speech is headed online.
It does, doesn't it? What's so fascinating to me is Tomnet isn't just about terrorism, it's about so much more.
What do you mean?
It forces us to ask these really broad questions, like how do we protect people from harm online while still protecting free speech? These are age-old questions, but in the digital age, they take on a whole new dimension.
Okay, so let's zoom out for a minute. We talked about the legal details, but what about the bigger picture? What does this ruling mean for society?
Well, one possible outcome is that platforms might become even more hands-off when it comes to moderating content.
Really? Even more than they already are?
It's possible. If they're less worried about getting sued, they might be less likely to remove content, even if it's offensive or potentially harmful. They might just say, hey, it's not our problem.
But wouldn't that just create more problems? More hate speech, more misinformation, all that bad stuff.
That's a real concern. A lot of people are worried about that. It's like this ruling, while well-intentioned, could actually make the internet an even more toxic place.
So what can we do about it? If the courts are basically saying platforms have limited liability, where do we go from here?
That's the question everyone's grappling with right now. Lawmakers, tech companies, even everyday users. There's no easy answer. But there are a few different approaches being considered.
Okay, let's hear them. What are some of the options on the table?
One option is to reform Section 230. That law we keep coming back to. You know, the one that shields platforms from liability for user-generated content?
Right. Some people say it's outdated.
Exactly. It was written for a different internet, a different time. So some argue that it needs an update, maybe get rid of the blanket immunity and create more specific guidelines about when platforms can and can't be held responsible for the content on their sites.
So instead of a free pass, we give them a rule book.
Something like that.
Yeah.
The idea is to incentivize platforms to be more proactive about moderating content, to actually take responsibility for what's happening on their turf.
I can see the logic there. But how do you even define what's harmful? Isn't that super subjective? What's offensive to one person might be totally fine to another.
You've hit on the biggest challenge with this approach. It's a slippery slope, for sure. Defining harmful in a way that's fair and objective, it's incredibly difficult.
It feels almost impossible.
And any attempt to do so could lead to censorship or, like we talked about before, platforms over-censoring out of fear and suppressing legitimate viewpoints. We don't want to create a chilling effect on free speech.
Definitely not. So what else is being considered? What are the other options?
Another approach focuses on transparency and accountability.
Okay, I like the sound of that.
The idea is to require platforms to be more open about how they operate, how they make decisions about content, what their policies are, how their algorithms work, the whole nine yards.
So less secrecy, more sunlight.
Exactly. Let's shine a light on those black boxes. The goal is to empower users and regulators to hold platforms accountable.
Okay, I'm on board with that.
Right.
But how do you actually enforce transparency? How do you make sure they're actually being open and honest?
That's the tricky part. It would probably involve a combination of things. Stronger regulations from the government, maybe. Independent audits by outside experts, and possibly even legal penalties for platforms that aren't complying.
So it's not just about writing new laws, it's about making sure those laws have teeth.
Right. There has to be some way to hold these companies' feet to the fire.
This is heavy stuff. It feels like this whole debate about online content moderation, it's just getting started.
It is. This is a conversation that's going to continue for years to come. It's about more than just legal technicalities. It's about fundamental questions of freedom, safety, and responsibility in the digital age.
No easy answers.
No easy answers at all.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today. From the specifics of Twitter v. Tomnet to the broader implications for free speech online. It's a complex issue, but hopefully we've shed some light on the key challenges and potential solutions.
I hope so too.
And as always, we encourage our listeners to stay engaged, stay informed, and keep asking those tough questions. The future of the internet, it's in our hands. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Twitter v. Tomnet. We'll see you next time.